All right, everybody, I'm joined by a very special returning guest to On the Ropes Boxing Radio. I'm joined by boxing commentator and Hall of Famer, Steve Farhood. How's it going today, Steve?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me on, and happy holiday to everybody.
Yes, yes. Well, it's definitely a pleasure to have you back on the show, Steve. And let's talk about boxing a little bit and, you know, a fight that people are still talking about. We just saw the replay of Wilder versus Fury. For the people that didn't get to see the pay-per-view, they got the chance to watch it and score it. You yourself have had a week to reflect on the fight. What were your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't expect it to be the atmosphere that I experienced there. I mean, there were 17,000 people in Staples, and, you know, it started out a little slow, and obviously it picked up, and then you got the impression that Wilder needed to do something dramatic to be competitive, and of course the 12th round was thrilling, and the feeling there, the buzz, was sort of, I think, a reminder of just how really exciting and how all-consuming a great boxing fight can be. And that was just fantastic. It was a fantastic finish, you know, obviously a controversial decision, but what I took away from it more than anything else was just, you know, this was a great moment. I mean, this was, and I'm not a fan of heavyweights, generally speaking, but when the heavyweights give you a good show, there's nothing like it. And, you know, that moment in the 12th round when Wilder knocked down Fury, and Fury looked like he was dead, and he got up and finished, and actually won the rest of the round, was one of the great moments of the year. So it was, you know, a fight I will take with me, even after 40 years of doing this. It's a fight I will take with me always, and it was very, very exciting.
Yeah, no, it's really amazing, Steve, when you look at a fight, and it's the moments in a fight that technically can make a fight great when, you know, if you look at the numbers themselves, it wouldn't particularly be considered that, because Fury landed 84 punches, Wilder landed only 71, but it was the drama of that fight, especially the last round, and the fact that Fury looked like he was just out, completely unconscious. And
yeah.
Speaking of that, when you saw that happen, when you watched that, did you think the fight was over?
Yes. Not a doubt in my mind, because I had a good view from where I was sitting. I had a good view of the combination that put him down on that left hook. And it was a combination of knowing Fury had gotten hit by Wilder's best and then watching Fury fall. I thought he hit his head on the canvas. He didn't, but he went down really hard. And then he was motionless. So when he was motionless, you know, I said, it's over. Plus, I scored the fight for Fury. I had Fury comfortably ahead going into that 12th round. So I'm thinking in my head, if he gets up, he has a chance to win. If he doesn't get up, this is going to be one of the most dramatic knockouts, you know, in recent memory. And I have a statistic that very few people know about. It's kind of interesting. In the history of world championship fights, of which there have been obviously thousands, the number of times a fighter who was trailing going into the last round and came back to score a knockout to win, in other words, to save the fight, is only about 13 or 14 times ever. Probably most famously, Julio Cesar Chavez against Meldrick Taylor. Jake LaMotta did it. A few other guys did it. But that's what I thought I saw. I thought I saw Wilder saving his title with a knockout. And then, of course, Fury got up, so it wasn't a knockout. And then it was a draw, so he didn't save his title. Although, actually, without the knockdown, he does lose. So, in essence, he did save his title with the knockdown. But I thought it was a knockout.
Now, one of the most amazing things about that 12th round is it's not only the fact that he got up, which was amazing in itself, but after he got up, to most people's eyes, he won the rest of the round after that point. What were your thoughts on the way he recovered?
I was shocked. I mean, you know, going into the fight in L.A., I remember talking to my Showtime colleagues and saying, is there a chance that Tyson Fury already views himself as a winner, given how much he's come back from, the tremendous personal comeback he's made, you know, from drugs, from being obese, from being suicidal, he says. Is there a chance that when the going gets tough in the fight that he won't pay the price he needs to pay because he already, you know, in his mind, he's already a winner having come back? Well, that very moment came, and he had to answer, you know, a moment that was very clear and very defined, and he answered it brilliantly and showed guts and heart that really we had no way one way or the other to think that he had or didn't have. You know, he never had a moment like that in the Klitschko fight, that's for sure. Yeah, he'd been knocked down before in other fights, but not by Deontay Wilder. So that was a very telling moment, and obviously there's something to be said for when he says, I'm a gypsy, and we were born to fight, and his heart will never again be questioned. And indeed, he was born to fight. So that was a tremendous moment that I think you know, even though he didn't win the fight, I think that moment will follow him for the rest of his career.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Steve, one thing that people are left with after the fight is the scoring. That's mm-hmm. one thing that's being talked about. And one particular scorecard has kind of captured the attention of people, and that's Alejandro Rochand's 115-111 score, meaning that he gave 7 rounds to Wilder. What are your thoughts on that scorecard?
Disagree with it big time. Rochand is a veteran official. He used to live in Mexico, then he moved to America in L.A., and I think he might be back in Mexico now. But I really thought that the close rounds, which were the early rounds, the first 5 or 6 rounds, most of them went to Fury. The only round I scored differently from the 3 judges was the first round. I gave it to Fury. They all gave it to Wilder. Very little happened in that first round. And, you know, sometimes in rounds where very little happens, they're just as hard to score as in rounds where there's a lot of action. So there were, you know, there were the obvious rounds to score, the Wilder knockdown rounds, a couple of rounds that Fury won. But I thought in the duller rounds when very little happened, I thought Fury clearly outboxed him. Wilder was missing badly. Fury didn't land a lot by himself, but he landed the cleaner shots. And I thought that he was clearly ahead. And I'd say that more people thought Fury deserved the decision than thought Wilder deserved the decision. But I'm not going to go out and call it an utter robbery. I know Paulie Malignaggi, my colleague, thought it was an utter robbery and couldn't believe Rochin's score and said so on the air. I wouldn't go that far because there were a lot of rounds where very little happened, and I get it if some people scored some of those rounds for Wilder. But I definitely thought Fury deserved the decision.
Well, in terms of both fighters' performances, Steve, Deontay Wilder, people view his performance as a performance where he was looking to score a knockout, that he wasn't using his jab enough, that he was looking for the big shots. And when people look at Fury's performance, they look at it as, you know, a boxing performance similar to what he put up against Klitschko. How do you view the performances?
I think it's very easy to be critical of Wilder, but here's the thing. There is not another heavyweight, not only today, but in history, who fights like Tyson Fury, who has his size, his reach, and his mobility. There's never been anyone like it. So while it's very easy to criticize Wilder for missing badly and maybe loading up and not punching to the body enough and his jab wasn't working, it's all understandable. Fury did this to Klitschko too. And I know Klitschko was older and perhaps somewhat diminished at that point, but this is what this guy does. So, you know, would it be different in a rematch? It ain't going to be easy for Wilder if he fights the guy 20 times. So I'm not all that critical of Wilder as some people have been, and I just think you got to remember who he was fighting, and he was fighting a very, very difficult guy to fight who fought his game plan and carried it through, and it worked.
Well, let's talk about the rematch because a lot of fans now want to see it. People that saw the first fight, there's even more interest in a second fight. Both fighters have said that they want it. In terms of Wilder's performance, is there anything he can do differently that will allow him to have more success?
Well, I certainly think he needs to use the jab more. You know, it's easy to say he has to pressure Fury, but Wilder is not a pressure fighter in the sense that he doesn't want to get close. He wants distance so he can land his big shots. He has to get started faster. And, you know, I think getting used to Fury's rhythm, and Fury's very awkward, I think that the fact that he's gone 12 rounds with him, I think that will help Wilder. And I would think he'd probably be favored to win again as he was in this fight, although not by very much. And Fury would probably have to fight a very similar kind of fight. I don't see big adjustments by Fury. Although perhaps Fury has been emboldened by his success because once you've gotten up from the kind of knockdown he got up from in the 9th and the 12th, I think you probably have even more confidence that no matter what Wilder does, I'm going to be okay and I'm going to be able to get up. So I think both guys could take positives away from what happened on December 1st.
All right. Well, one final question in relation to this fight that I do have to ask you about, seeing as you are a boxing historian. Going into the fight, there was a lot of talk of Tyson Fury being the lineal champion, and you hear from all different sides people saying that doesn't mean anything, people saying it does. How do you view it?
The reason I might not give it as much credence as under normal circumstances is because he retired. He left boxing. So if he were the lineal champion and left boxing, to me that would – you could argue anyway that that takes away his lineal title because he retired. Had he never retired, that would be different. So, look, I don't want to give the alphabets too much credit, and Wilder's obviously an alphabet champion, WBC, but there's something to be said for lineal titles. You know, Manny Pacquiao had a couple of them. It kind of overrides the alphabets at times, because we know the alphabets can be just nonsensical in who they choose to be champions and who they give title fights to. So there's something to be said, but to me, the lineal title, I think Fury lost a little bit when he retired. You know, and he retired because of personal reasons, obviously not boxing reasons. But let me ask you this, Jenna. Who did you think won the fight?
Honestly, I had the fight scored for Tyson Fury. I had it 114-112.
Okay, that's fair. Fair scoring. And that was off the pay-per-view, right?
Yes, off the pay-per-view. I did not watch the replay yet. I have it recorded. I got to watch
okay.
the replay. Because you only have to watch them twice to get your final score, because in the moment sometimes, but then you give it a second go, sometimes those close rounds can change.
Yes, exactly. That's why I never score. You know, the one thing, and I think your listeners should hear this from somebody who does this sort of for a living, at least unofficially. The hardest thing about scoring is not knowing what you're seeing. Yes, you need to know that. You need to know boxing a little bit. The hardest thing about scoring is focus. You have to be so focused. And I know when I do Showbox and I'm listening to my producer and I'm listening to Barry Tompkins and Raul Marquez and I'm scoring the fight, it's very hard to do. I would never think my scoring for Showbox fights would be as good as it would be for Show Champ fights, because for the Show Champ fights, I'm really focused. It's my sole job, pretty much, and I'm really paying attention to it. You have to really zero in on what's going on in that ring to score properly. And, you know, that's something that I think judges know, but I don't think that all the fans necessarily know that.
No, definitely. Trust me. I heard enough on my Facebook feed there. You know, fans, they're strong one way or another, but not all fans
sure.
do know how to score certain fights and do get kind of caught up in the moments.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And a lot of people said, oh, come on, Wilder knocked him down twice. How could he not have won the fight? Well, that's nonsensical. You know, it's a fight that goes a distance is 12 three-minute fights, and you have to score each one individually, and because two of them were clearly 10-8 rounds, it doesn't really mean much in the big picture. You've got to look at all 12 rounds.
Absolutely. All right, well, Steve, let's take a look at what you have coming up next, and that is a fight between Canelo Alvarez versus Rocky Fielding, a fight that really kind of came out of nowhere. Well, now it's going to be this upcoming weekend at Madison Square Garden. Curious what your thoughts are on it.
Well, you know, it's clearly a chance for Canelo to become a Triple Crown champion. Some people are going to be critical and say, you know, he's winning the regular WBA title when Callum Smith is the real champ. And I get it. Rocky Fielding does not have much of a resume. He won the title unexpectedly against Callum Smith, his number one countryman rival. He was knocked out in one round. So, you know, you can't get too excited about a victory for Canelo. I think what's more significant is Canelo fighting east of the Mississippi River for the first time, fighting in the Garden for the first time. You know, let's see how he draws, and let's see how big a star he is, because most people consider him the biggest star in boxing. And, you know, the fact that he's coming back so quickly after the Golovkin rematch, I think is great. Some of the DAZN fighters, Big Baby Miller and Tevin Farmer, have both bounced back after shows and fought again very quickly. And that's like a throwback to old-time fighters, and I think it's great, because one of the most under-discussed points about how boxing has changed in the last 5 to 10 years is that fighters are fighting less than they've ever fought. And, you know, how big a star would LeBron James be if we only saw him 5 times a year on TV? Instead, like, yeah, 3/4 of his games are on TV, one channel or another. That's how you make stars. And boxers, yeah, they make a lot of money per fight, the big ones, but we're not seeing them as often, and that's not good. So the fighters who are willing to fight, like Clarissa Shields has done it now, Tevin Farmer has done it, Big Baby Miller, I get it, you can't fight monsters every time when you're fighting frequently, but the more the merrier. I think it's very healthy, it's good for them, and I think it's good for the fans.
Now, this fight here with Canelo fighting at 168, a lot of people see it as, well, he just, you know, had to cut weight down for the fight with Golovkin. This fight's relatively close to the last one, so he's fighting at the higher weight. Do you see him as testing the waters in this weight class, or being more of a fight of, you know, convenience?
I think it's a fight of convenience. I don't see any kind of jump, you know, a permanent jump to 168. There are a lot of fights at 160 for him. You know, we don't know what Golovkin's going to do as far as networks or streaming, whether he's going to go to Top Rank or DAZN or PBC. That all remains. He finds himself in a very good position, Golovkin. But if he signs with DAZN, then obviously that opens up a third fight with Canelo. And why not? You know, the first two were both good fights and close. But there's also Daniel Jacobs who fights for Matchroom. That's an obvious matchup. And Andrade, who is probably somebody most people are going to try to ignore because he's a difficult guy to fight. high risk, low reward. But that's a fight I think people would find interesting as well. So, and David Lemieux. So my guess is if Lemieux beats Toriano Johnson on this card at the Garden, he would probably be next to Canelo, and I think we'd see Canelo back at middleweight.
Mm. Well, Steve, you just mentioned the kind of the streaming thing that's going on there, DAZN. You know, a lot of people are excited about it because it's another way to see boxing, more boxing. But, of course, with DAZN gaining prominence, we just saw HBO sign off for the final time this past weekend. I'm just curious what your thoughts are to boxing's transition to streaming service and also to HBO getting out of boxing.
Well, two very major things happening there, for sure. I mean, I think Showtime, to pat my company on the back, Showtime was at the forefront of the streaming. We've been streaming fights for a long time. And it's clearly part of the future, a major part of the future. I'm not saying television is going to go away. Certainly not. I don't think television will go away. I don't think pay-per-view will go away. But streaming is a significant part of it just because of the technology. And, you know, young people like yourself don't have cable necessarily anymore and are doing everything via apps and stuff. And it's hard for someone my age to totally comprehend because I came from a different era. But the fact is that's the world we live in today. As far as HBO, I was saddened. You know, part of me was saddened. Look, I've watched HBO from day one. Who hasn't? You know, they had a lot of great fights and a lot of great fighters and a lot of great broadcasts. So it was sad. I think some of it, you know, you can't totally say it just happened. I mean, there's reasons it happened, and I'm not going to get into them now. But I think the last show, unfortunately, I don't think the fights were very interesting. But the broadcast was well done, and there are a lot of very talented people that work at HBO, and I hope, you know, that's who I think about. I think about the people. You know, I worked at HBO briefly before I went to Showtime, and, you know, they're good talented people there, and I hope they all end up on their feet.
All right, well, Steve, I just have a few more questions before I let you off the line, and there's one very interesting fight that's taking place early next year in Showtime. Pay-per-view will have it. It is Manny Pacquiao versus Adrian Broner. It will be on January 19th. I'm wondering what you think of that matchup.
Fascinating matchup. Obviously, Manny Pacquiao looked pretty good against Matisse. It was his first knockout in like 8 years or something. So Broner is a guy who has not probably been what we thought he might have become. But, you know, he's a competent fighter. He's also 12 years younger or 11 years younger than Manny. And there's two ways to look at this fight. One is if Manny wins, and he'll be favored to win, if he wins and looks good, does that mean that we get Mayweather again? I don't know the answer to that because Floyd, you know, Floyd's unpredictable. I'm sure Manny would like it because even if it does one half of what the first fight did, it would be huge money. Secondly, and maybe more dramatically, what if Broner wins? You know, do we get Floyd and Broner? I mean, think about you know, the bad blood between the two and how Broner was Floyd's little brother at one point, and, you know, that kind of went south. And, I mean, you know, Broner would be sort of reborn. And a lot of performances that were not what we expected would be forgotten should he beat Manny. Because you fight a Manny Pacquiao, it elevates your profile so much. You know, I feel that Danny Garcia and Sean Porter and Keith Thurman kind of missed out on becoming as big as they should have been because they didn't get to fight Floyd or Manny. Because Floyd and Manny carried the sport for years and years, and they're the biggest names in boxing. And if you fight them and happen to do well against them, well, you're elevated by so much more than you are fighting anybody else. So this is a tremendous opportunity for Broner. You know, can he take advantage of it? I don't know. He's disappointed us in the past, and we have to see what happens. But it's kind of an interesting matchup because you wonder if Manny will be fighting at 40 for the first time, 40 years old, and, you know, at some point he's going to slow down. He looked very good his last fight. So I don't know what to expect.
Mm. If he can beat Adrian Broner, do you see anything changing in a rematch with Floyd Mayweather at this point in both their careers?
That's so hard to answer because, you know, there were times with Floyd when he fought McGregor that you said, boy, Floyd's getting hit an awful lot for a guy who's fighting somebody who's never fought a pro fight before. So, you know, is age going to catch up on Floyd? I think if there's anything we saw with Roy Jones is that once you lose your reflexes just a little bit, you can really, you know, start getting hit a lot. Now, Floyd's technically superior to Roy Jones, but we saw that with Roy Jones. Will we see it with Floyd? Not everybody is Bernard Hopkins. Not everybody can be successful into their 40s, you know, the way Bernard was. So I don't know. I don't know how age – I mean, both fighters, Manny and Floyd, would be over 40. The tendency for me initially is to think I don't think much would be different. I think Floyd would still be the, you know, the better boxer. But if you take away just a little bit of his instinct and his quickness, who knows?
Well, Steve, to close out this interview, I want to get your thoughts on 2018 as a boxing year, some of the fights that we saw, and, you know, some of the excitement we got. What were your thoughts on this past year?
Well, I think 2018 was really strong. I think a lot of important things happened. Obviously, HBO going away was a negative, but in terms of positives, you know, you have more boxing. You have boxing on Fox on prime time. A deal was signed that will start in December 22nd, I think it is, with the Charlos. You know, boxing on primetime TV is healthy. You have ESPN and ESPN Plus and a real commitment. That's the top rank, you know, segment. A real commitment, and ESPN is very watched. The numbers for the recent fight they just did was, you know, the Loma fight was huge numbers. You have Showtime continuing with PBC. So I think there seems to be a lot of outlets that are very anxious to show boxing, and that's a very good thing. The only negative you hope is that the difficult fights to make will get made. And we start with, obviously, with Wilder and Joshua, and we go down from there. And that's what we have to hope. We have to hope. Usually when the money is right, usually we get those fights, regardless of promotional ties, regardless of TV ties. That's what we have to hope for. And in hoping for it, maybe I'm thinking the glass is half full, but I'm always positive. Because if you look at boxing history, with very few exceptions, when a huge fight could get made, it gets made. Now, granted, mm-hmm. with Floyd Manny, it was a little late in getting made. You could argue that. But usually the fights get made because it's all about money. And when people can all make money, the fights get made.
Well, Steve, as always, it's been a great pleasure having you come on the Ropes Boxing Radio. I thank you very much for your time today. And I wish you and your family a happy holiday.
Thanks so much, Jenna. Thanks for having me on. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.